That was the sound that came from the server on Tuesday night, before the good folks at the Helix Foundation gave it some antacid and rubbed its belly. Depending on how your podcatchers are designed, some of you may find yourselves repeat downloading some recent episodes that you've already heard. I apologize for that. At the same time, I want to give a shout out and thanks to Fongaboo and Dino at the Helix Foundation for bringing the server back to life. Now, on with the show. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 112 of Little Brother for the 24th of December, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are very strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Buckle in, it's a long one, so let's get started. Once again, U.S. lawmakers are attempting to ban TikTok. Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, has introduced a bill that will block transactions from any social media company in or under the influence of China, with TikTok being the most obvious. A similar bill was introduced in the House by Representative Mike Gallagher, Republican of Wisconsin, and Raja Krishnamurti, Democrat of Illinois. There is some speculation that the result may be for TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, to spin off the social network to an organization operating elsewhere. In the meantime, TikTok has, probably rightly so, been banned from government-administered devices. In other social media news, the European Union wants to bar Meta, the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Oculus, from using personal data to place advertisements. Given that this appears to be Meta's primary revenue model, this is going to be somewhat problematic for them. However, as their European headquarters are located in the Republic of Ireland, they are subject to European and Irish law, and the decisions of the European Data Protection Board, such as this one, are binding. I've spoken a number of times about various forms of spyware used by law enforcement agencies around the world, most notably CSO groups Pegasus and its competitors. In Greece, lawmakers have just approved legislation banning commercial spyware of this sort on the heels of allegations that officials have abused it to spy on journalists and activists. Cryptographic hashing algorithms are ways to take bodies of data, slap some math on them, and get a number. A very small change in the input should cause a radical difference in the output. They can be used to reliably identify chunks of data, including full files, or to check for errors in transmission or tampering. Combined with public key cryptography, they can be used to sign documents, code, or other data in a way that can be reliably traced back to an origin. The SHA-1 cryptohash has been around since 1993, and so quite obviously it's very old by computer science standards, and, to be blunt, it's been reversible for some time now. The news here is that the National Institute of Standards and Technology, the federal agency responsible for establishing data handling standards, is officially retiring the SHA-1 algorithm. It is, in my humble opinion, long overdue. Alphabet, the parent company of Google and others, have announced that they are now offering end-to-end encryption on Gmail. If you activate the new feature and use Gmail on the web to send email to another Gmail user, Alphabet's own servers will not even be able to access the data in any way. A number of online tax preparation services have been caught sharing data with Meta, the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, and others. Services involved included H&R Block, TaxAct, and TaxSlayer, and they used a tool from Meta called MetaPixel to transmit data. Using this pushes data to Meta. This appears to be a case of incompetence rather than malfeasance, but still, actual people may be impacted. This problem wouldn't be a problem if the very same industries hadn't lobbied for the IRS not to just run the numbers themselves like a rational functioning country worthy of the adjective advanced. Oh, but we can spend money to advance in other ways, right? Think of it what you will, but the Biden administration has decided to spend $500,000 on artificial intelligence solutions. What are they doing with it? Well, they're using it to detect microaggressions on social media. Okay, this is probably something that's worth doing, but why is this a government function? It should be in the interest of the social media platforms to do this themselves because it can work towards attracting back users who have fled because they've had enough. People like, oh, for instance, me. Of course, the war in Ukraine rages on, and there is news this week that Kremlin-backed threat actors have been targeting a large oil refinery in a NATO nation. Russia is apparently intent on poking the hornet's nest. As it turns out, the attack was a failure. The report published by NATO does not name the facility that was targeted nor the country in which it is located, presumably for OPSEC reasons. Going the other way, Alex Holden, a Ukrainian cyber intelligence expert, has decided to poke the Russian bear. He and a team of others have attacked one of Russia's largest illicit drug markets, known as Solaris, and stolen from it 1.6 bitcoins with a value of just under $27,000 at the time of this writing. Where did he direct the funds? It went to a Kyiv-based charity named Enjoying Life, which is using the contributions to help internally displaced people, their families, and the elderly. Enjoying Life co-founder Tina Mikhailovskaya has confirmed that they have received the donation. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned in the last 2 weeks. This'll teach me to take a week off. We've got 6 items today. First up, we have Uber. Again. Last time was in September, and I reported it in episode 101 and followed up in 102. The threat actor this time is called UberLeaks, and this time customer data may have been compromised, though it's not clear how much. There is some speculation that the pwn this time may have been the result of a misconfigured cloud bucket because apparently getting that right is difficult. Number 2, Microsoft. While source code should not be kept a secret, code signing keys should. Code signing keys are used to create a signature on a piece of software that's very easy to verify and very difficult to forge. Microsoft's have somehow been utilized to sign malware. This is apparently the second time this has happened, but I wasn't able to find coverage from the first time, so I may not have covered that story. Third one is kind of embarrassing, but in no way surprising. InfraGuard. InfraGuard is a national nonprofit organization, a partnership between businesses and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. and it is an information sharing and analysis effort serving the interests and combining the knowledge base of a wide variety of private sector and government members. Krebs on Security is reporting that they were hacked. The attacker was able to easily access user data via the InfraGuard API. Number 4. Shall we go for a second government pwn? Yes. Yes, we shall. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services got pwned. This one is being blamed on a third-party vendor, ASRC Federal Data Solutions, and the agency is stating that their vendor operated in violation of rules set by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The result? They are now notifying 254,000 Medicare beneficiaries that their data was compromised and ransomed. Number 5. The U.S. infrastructure in general. Three federal agencies, the NSA, CISA, and FBI, have stated that Chinese threat actors have been exploiting vulnerabilities in the U.S. infrastructure and turning individual devices into command and control services for further exploitation. Affected equipment includes gear from Cisco, Citrix, Draytec, D-Link, Fortinet, Microtik, Netgear, Pulse, QNAP, and Zixil. The three agencies have advised everyone to patch your systems. And finally, we have Okta. Okta are a provider of single sign-on and other related authentication services. Apparently, their situation is that their source code has been stolen after their GitHub repositories were hacked. If their code is any good, this is probably of minimal impact. After all, some of the best software out there, including everything used to produce this show, is open source. Then again, if it doesn't undergo the kind of public scrutiny, then you just don't know, do you? Well, just before this episode went to tape, I got the breaking news that Okta has been pwned again using the source code, so I guess their code is not worthy. And that's the rundown of the pwns for the past 2 weeks. Remember, it's easier to stay off of this list if you patch your systems. Holy shit, y'all, Twitter. There has been so much news about Twitter in the past couple of weeks that I've decided I need to put it all together because the elephant in the room seems to have become a bull in a china shop. Now, before I go into this, keep in mind that Musk has declared on several occasions that he is a free speech absolutist. Some of his actions track with that. Most do not. One of the actions that does track is that Musk has disbanded the Twitter Trust and Safety Advisory Group. The group was comprised of around 100 different independent organizations focused on civil rights, human rights, etc. It was formed in 2016 to address a number of the platform's problems, including hate speech, exploitation, and issues of self-harm and suicidal ideation. But, you know, as the platform descends into an unregulated, uncontrolled cesspool of free speech separated from its accompanying responsibilities, who needs any of that, right? Oh, but free speech isn't free now, is it? Did you know that, for a bit anyway, Twitter banned the mention of any rival platforms, such as Mastodon or Instagram? Well, they surely did. It was a big deal, to the point that the European Union actually has a law against such bans. Under the law, the EU can fine Twitter up to 20% of its annual revenue for it. Somehow, the Twitter user who posted about this to Twitter still has the use of his account. It seems, though, that Twitter's lawyers may have conveyed this to Musk because the policy has since been deleted. Speaking of Musk, he made an appearance on stage at a Dave Chappelle show in San Francisco, essentially right in Twitter's backyard, and the crowd booed him off the stage. We know this, among other things, because someone named Jacob Stolworthy tweeted about it. Stolworthy's account on Twitter has, of course, been suspended. Speaking of suspensions, Musk also suspended the accounts of a number of prominent journalists, including Donny O'Sullivan from CNN, independent journalist Aaron Rupar, and Drew Harwell from The Washington Post. Basically, it appears that any journalist who has dared to write about the account that tracks the whereabouts of Musk's private jet was suspended. This caused enough alarm to garner comment from UN Chief Antonio Guterres, who commented through his spokesman, Stefan Dujarric, quote, "Media voices should not be silenced on a platform that professes to be a space for freedom of speech," end quote. Go back to that comment I made at the very start about Musk being a free speech absolutist. Interestingly enough, the Twitter user who reported about who got banned did not himself get banned. Musk has reinstated some of the accounts. Oh, I mentioned the private jet a minute ago. For those not in the know, Jack Sweeney, a 20-year-old student at the University of Central Florida, has, for several years now, run a Twitter account that publicly posts the movements of the private jets of prominent individuals. This wasn't done as an attack so much as a labor of love stemming from enthusiasm for aviation. The data comes from a crowdsourced system called Open Sky, through which a number of volunteer enthusiasts, including some that I know, have installed receivers that pick up the transponders of passing aircraft and report the sightings to a central registry, all of this being public information. Also public information is the tail numbers of the aircraft. All Sweeney did was put these pieces together and perform some interesting queries on the data set at regular intervals. Now, at some point in the past, prior to Musk buying Twitter, Musk actually offered Sweeney $5,000 for the account. Sweeney declined. At this point, obviously, the account has been suspended, because, in case it's not obvious by now, that's what Musk does. Musk has also threatened Sweeney with legal action. However, Sweeney has publicly stated that he does not consider the threat to be credible. Musk's tone deafness knows no boundaries either. It appears that, via email, Twitter has laid off most of the company's infrastructure division. Merry fucking Christmas, guys! I'd expect things to start falling apart with what is now likely to be an inadequate staff to manage incidents. Related to that, Twitter has been hit with dozens of legal complaints by ex-employees. Maybe Musk thought it was as simple as telling people they're fired in the style of The Apprentice or maybe a 1960s Hanna-Barbera cartoon. Who knows? I mean, if Mel Blanc were still alive, he'd have tried to hire him to deliver the message. As a result of all of this, Musk's other companies have taken substantial hits. Tesla stock has fallen by almost half its value as a result of the CEO's antics at Twitter. It seems now, though, that Twitter will make the ultimate layoff. He put himself on stage at the Dave Chappelle performance thinking he was a hero and finding out that he wasn't, so it should come as no surprise that he would make another similar mistake of thinking he was loved when he put up a poll on Twitter asking the Twitterverse if he should stand down as Twitter CEO. The answer was a resounding yes. Don't about y'all, but I will believe it when I see it. Facial recognition technology has officially gotten out of hand. So, in case you missed what happened, last week, a mother who was going to attend a Christmas spectacular at Radio City Music Hall with her daughter, her daughter's Girl Scout troop, and some of the other mothers from the troop was unceremoniously asked to leave before she even got to her seat. What was her crime? Well, it seems as though the woman is employed by a law firm. That law firm is currently on a case representing a client against Madison Square Garden. Madison Square Garden is owned by MSG Holdings, the same corporation that also owns Radio City Music Hall. She is not on the case. She doesn't even practice in New York State. She isn't even admitted to the New York bar. She works cases in other states. However, when she went through the security gates at the event, the cameras at the gate got a look at her face and forwarded this to a facial recognition system, which somehow had her picture, and it identified her as persona non grata, which is a fancy Latin term for get the fuck out. The woman, Kelly Conlon, was approached by several security guards and hustled out of the building. Thankfully, enough other adults were available to attend the show with the troupe while she sat outside, humiliated, and waited. Let's start with the obvious. I will grant you that it is perfectly within the venue's rights to exclude who they will, so long as it is not for reasons of the person being part of a protected class. That doesn't make it right. It is, for the moment, perfectly within the venue's rights to use facial recognition to identify people who are not welcome. That doesn't make it cool. Personally, I wonder how deep down the rabbit hole MSG Holdings goes with this farce. If they ban an attorney who happens to be in the same firm as the one representing a client against them, even though she's not on the case, do they also ban all of the paralegals? What about the secretaries? The file clerks? The motherfucking janitor? The third cousin once removed from the janitor's former college roommate? Next thing you know, they're going to be whining about how nobody attends the fucking Christmas special anymore. These women did not come here to bust your nutcracker. They came here to see the show. They didn't come to make trouble. They wanted to see the Rockettes chorus line do their famous high kicks in person. They wanted the pomp and the circumstance of the very show that has been gracing this venerable venue since 1933. But let's go a step further, right? Surely they could have flagged her when she bought her ticket, right? Most performance venues already have way more control over show tickets than is truly warranted. Surely they had the name of every one of the attendees in the party well before they presented themselves at the security gate for entry, right? You could have saved her a bunch of hassle and humiliation by telling her before she traveled to New York that she was persona non grata. Anyway, it seems as though this is not the only case where this has happened. Apparently back in November, another lawyer, Alexis Mahano, or Majano, I'm not sure, was similarly unceremoniously booted from Madison Square Garden, where he had gone to see the Knicks play the Celtics. He, too, ended up traveling to New York for nothing and waiting outside for the rest of his party. Mahano works for a different law firm than Conlon, and like Conlon, has no relation to a case against MSG Holdings, except having had the bad luck to work for a firm that is involved. Not cool, MSG. Not cool. As I said a moment ago, this is fully within the venue's legal rights. Facial recognition is legal. For now. However, if venues would like to see this sort of use of facial recognition outlawed, this is a good way to make it happen. And if this is the way that it's going to be used, I would fully support such a ban. There is no news as of this writing about whether or not Conlon will be bringing legal action, but as she is an attorney, I see it as exceptionally unlikely that she will roll over and let it go. In the meantime, Mahano has provided MSG Holdings with a real reason to ban him, as he is currently represented by colleague Rob Abiuso in his action against MSG Holdings over the incident. Privacy International have just published a most excellent guide to avoid being monitored by social media. I'll link to it in the program notes. The guide is specifically addressed to climate activists. However, if you are not a climate activist, the advice really doesn't change much. Any kind of political activism can benefit from this advice, as can anyone who just wants to be free from monitoring. I've read through the report, and I'm presenting for you here the top five takeaways from the report to protect yourself from social media monitoring. However, if you're involved in any kind of political activism, I strongly recommend that you read the report. It's not all that long, and implementing the steps from it. The report recognizes, and I do too in this context, that if you are politically active, avoiding social media is not really an option. Social media is one of the most powerful organizing tools of the 21st century. First and foremost, and above all else, when using social media, do not share more information than is necessary to get the job done. Don't tag yourself or anyone else in photos that you might take, whether at a political event or in private. There is no valid reason to feed information into the system. If the social media platform has a setting that allows you to prevent others from tagging you, use it. Think carefully about what you use for a profile picture, perhaps choosing to use a scene rather than a headshot, or even feeding in false information by using an AI-generated picture, such as those you can find on thispersondoesnotexist.com. Second, use any technical countermeasures that are available to you. Depending on your social platform of choice, there may be options available to engage end-to-end encryption, two-factor authentication, and other useful things. I'd also like to add to this my personal endorsement of DuckDuckGo, which is available as a free download for Android and iPhone. Amongst its features is a beta option called App Tracking Protection. This feature sets itself up as a fake VPN and filters out any trackers that it is aware of as your data pass through it. I've been using it for a couple of months now, and it actually works pretty well. Third, and this is really kind of extension to number one, minimize the amount of information you put into your profile. Does Facebook really need to know where you went to school? Does Reddit need really a paragraph about you? No social media platform needs to know where you live, where you work, when it's your birthday, etc., while also being aware of your political leanings and activities. Fourth, log the hell off. If you're done using the site, log off. This is especially true if you're using a public or a borrowed device, or if you access a site using a web browser. Be sure to use incognito mode if you do, and close the window when you're done. This will prevent the device from holding on to any cookies or any other data that will allow the sites to track you to other activities. Lastly, be aware of metadata. Pictures, video, and audio recordings that you take may include information that doesn't need to be included, such as the latitude and longitude, time of day, or other revealing information. Look through the settings for all of your apps and turn off any such features that you can find. Also, be aware that what you actually capture with the camera may reveal your location as well. If you take a photo that includes, say, the Empire State Building, One World Trade Center, Citicorp Center, or the Chrysler Building in it, well, it's pretty clear what island you're standing on now, isn't it? While those are blatant and obvious examples, more mundane things may give away your location, such as the logo or the route number on a passing public transit. I personally make a hobby out of trying to figure out what cities are shown in various videos that I see online. Anyway, I once again recommend going and reading the report. Again, I've linked to it in this episode's description, and I will point out the report itself also has links to platform-specific advice for Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, so go get it, and go improve your safety as an activist today. As usual, we will end this week's show with the fail of the week. We have two this week. Back in episode 110, there was a headline item about Eufy and their security cameras. In the item, I talked about how Eufy products were uploading unencrypted content to the cloud, in contravention of the company's privacy policies. Well, now Eufy have fixed the problem. Did they fix it by stopping the uploading of unencrypted images to the cloud? Do you think this would be in the fail of the week if that were the fix? Nope. No, they fixed the problem instead by removing all privacy-focused language from their website, thus resolving the conflict. Speaking of privacy fails, that brings us to our next item, which concerns an iRobot Roomba. I talked about these at some length in episode 96, covering the news that Amazon had purchased iRobot and explaining why this was a very bad thing. Now, this took an interesting twist that probably hasn't got much to do with the ownership of Roomba, so much as being instructive of the risks associated with putting a cloud-connected mobile camera platform that you do not control into your home. The news story I'm talking about is, of course, the one that showed up on the MIT Technology Review last week, in which a woman was sitting on the toilet in the privacy of her own home and was captured by the camera of her Roomba, which in turn somehow set off a chain of events that led up to that photo being posted on Facebook. The images were posted to a number of closed social media groups, which suggests that the individuals in possession of the pictures were aware of its sensitivity, but lacking in the good judgment and common decency not to share them. In retrospect, I guess this was inevitable. As cloud-connected appliances abound, there will often be bad apples within the workforce of the companies whose cloud compute and storage facilities are in use, and who will breach common decency as well as the policies of their employers just to be a creep. Enough. We need self-capable devices to replace all of the cloud-connected ones that we use, or we can just, you know, get out the old Eureka and call it a day. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Misdemeanor, Fungaboo, Chris, Joe Cadillac, Azriel, David, Ven, and Mister73 for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well.